So actually, we're going to start in Genesis 27. Just a little bit of review in verse 41. And I'll put that up on the screen if you don't have it with you. Sorry for the top line getting cut off. But let's start reading there in Genesis 27. And Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, "The days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then I will slay my brother Jacob." And these words of Esau, her elder son, were told to Rebekah. And she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said unto him, "Behold, thy brother, as touching thee, doth comfort himself, purposing to kill thee. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice, and arise and flee, thou to Laban, my brother, to Haran." Now remember the locations here. We're going to come back to Haran a little bit later. "Tarry with him a few days until thy brother's fury turn away, until thy brother's anger turn away from thee, and he forget that thou which thou hast done to him. Then I will send and fetch thee from thence. Why should I be deprived also of both of you in one day?" So, if you remember last week, we were talking about this story. We know Jacob and Esau. Esau feels tricked out of the birthright, and that made him pretty angry, even though he probably heard or at least knew God's promise was to go to Jacob eventually anyway. So either he was ignoring that fact or just didn't believe that that was true about God's promise, that he believed he should have the birthright because he's the oldest. And remember, back then, that's what normally happened. The oldest got the birthright, they got the inheritance, and then decided what to do with it from there. But Jacob has it, and we're going to see a little bit later that his father also is going to bless him again, and I'm sure that just makes Esau warm and fuzzy. But Esau is so upset that he's going to kill him, but he's going to wait until when? Until his father dies. So he's like comforting himself. "You know what? I'll just kill him after my father passes away." So literally, that's what the Bible says. He's comforting himself with the thought of murdering his brother. It's kind of sad, and you might think like, you know, oh, back then they didn't have such evil thoughts. That's television today. No, no. Sinful hearts have always been around. But let's continue reading with that last verse in 27 and just kind of get a bigger picture of what happened last time. "And Rebekah said unto Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth." And if you remember last week, the daughters of Heth, that referred to all those generations, the Canaanites, that they didn't want them to marry. "If Jacob take a wife of the daughters of Heth, such as these, which are the daughters of the land, what good shall my life do me?" So if you remember in the last verse here, verse 45, "Why should I be deprived also of you both in one day?" She's referring to Jacob and Esau. She's talking to Jacob saying, "I'm going to be deprived of you both. I'm going to lose you both. You'll both be like dead to me." Why would she say that? Well, more specifically here, you see when she's talking to her husband, Isaac, that if he marries a wife of the Canaanites, this land that we will inherit, or the heathen of the people that he doesn't want them to be with, then he will also be dead to me like Esau is. So that's a big deal. I mean, to think that your own sons are dead to you, it was a big deal. Well, let's think about this. Let's break it down here. A little bit of review, a little intro here. Esau hates Jacob, plans to kill him. Rebekah's the first one to tell Jacob to leave. "Get away, and then when your brother gets over it, I'll call you back." Do you think he'd get over it? I don't know. It's just funny to me. And then Rebekah feels that Esau is already dead to her. Why? Because he has married a Canaanite woman, a woman of Heth. He's actually married two. And then we're even going to read in this later on in the passage, he's going to marry three. So it's not so much the fact that he's not only married a heathen, but he's doing worse to it. He's adding insult to injury, I guess, is the phrase here. And then I want you to turn back to 2 Corinthians 6:14. Now, many of you probably know where this passage goes or where it comes from. Does anybody remember what it's about? Before you turn there, don't cheat. This is the unequally yoked passage. So let's go ahead and read it and get a little more specific. And then we'll come back to Genesis. I think a lot of the New Testament is really a clarification of the Old Testament. So it's not that God's coming up with a new law, or Jesus when he said this, or Paul when he was speaking to his disciples when he said it, that all of a sudden you shouldn't marry someone that's ungodly. No, this is a clarification of something from the beginning of the book. Did God ever want you to marry someone that wasn't also following him? No. Okay. 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14. Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? And he really wants to get to the picture here, so he's going to give you lots of illustrations. Can you make a dark place lighter? Yes. Can you make a light place darker? I mean, it's like they can't exist together. One replaces the other, is what this passage is really getting at. And what concord hath Christ with Belial, or Satan? And what part hath he that believeth with an infidel, or a person that doesn't believe? And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? I think that's humorous right there, that applies to even today. How many churches, and I'm not talking about Baptist churches, but churches in general, can you walk in and see idols? Or graven images? And I can't rule Baptists out either. I've been in a Baptist church where they had a stone statue of the preacher. And I'm thinking, okay, I think there's a lot about physical idols. I mean, you could say we have the idols of money, the idols of, okay, yeah, but physically, that's an obvious idol. So again, what part does the church or the temple of God have with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God, as God hath said. So if you are trusting in Christ as your Savior, you are the church, the house of God. So, as God hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them and will be their God, and they shall be my people. Let's keep reading. Wherefore, come out from among them and be separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. And I will be the Father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. I think this goes back to another illustration. I'm sure you've heard it before, but I'll say it again because it really stuck with me as a child. If you're standing up on the table being the righteous person, and you marry or date or see or hang out with the ungodly person sitting on the floor, is it easier to pull them up or them to pull you down? Right? So this goes back to that illustration, I think. Rebecca has got to the point where she has written off Esau because of who he married, even though he should have known better because he was part of the godly people. And I can't say whether or not Esau is saved, but again, we know them by their works. So that makes you wonder. All right, let's move on. Back to Genesis 28, please. This is today's passage. We'll just read a few verses. Who you marry matters, and when you marry, the one you're with, you have to make the right one. Now, I'm not saying like, okay, well, I married this unsaved person, so I have to make them saved. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that you have to honor God with the current marriage you're in. It's not try again. Okay? And that's the hard part here. But let's read from Jacob's example, see if we can pull anything out of Jacob's life, and then we'll read the opposite example of what not to do, what Esau did. And I think you'll see a lot of illustration as far as what people do today. Genesis 28:1 says, "And Isaac called Jacob and blessed him." So this is Isaac, his father, blessing Jacob a second time. more specific with this blessing. And charged him and said unto him, thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan, which would include Heth and all the others. Arise and go to Padan Aram. We'll come back to that place. To the house of Bethuel, thy mother's father, and take thee a wife from thence of the daughters of Laban, thy mother's brother. And God Almighty bless thee and make thee fruitful and multiply thee. Where does that come from? Be fruitful and multiply. Same book, right? But this was even before Abraham got his prophecy. Who is that blessing given to? Be fruitful and multiply. That was back in Adam's day. So this is pulling all the way back from Adam, and Abraham's blessing was that thou mayest be a multitude of people on the earth. How many remember the song, Abraham had many sons, many sons had... Okay, that's where it comes from. And number four, and give thee a blessing of Abraham to thee and to thy seed with thee, that thou mayest inherit the land wherein thou art a stranger. So you're a stranger right now, everywhere you walk, but this is the land you're going to have as your own, which God gave unto Abraham. And Isaac sent away Jacob, and he went to Padan Aram unto Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, Jacob, and Esau's mother. Okay, so a lot of clarifications here. Let's back up. Not only does Isaac bless Jacob again, but he gets more specific with his promise. Remember, before he gave him the blessing of the birthright, which would include what? What would that all include?
Pretty much everything.
Well, okay, everything he owns, right? But does he own the promised land yet, physically? No. Has he been promised it? Okay, so he's adding that to it. He's saying, okay, you know how I'm supposed to get all of this in the future? You're supposed to get it all in the future. And you'll see that as we go down through Genesis, it's passed on to the next generation, to the next generation, to the next generation. That requires some patience and faith. And if you think about it, like, God promises me something, I would at least expect to get it in my lifetime. If God promises me something, I would expect it to come to me, but not to my generation. When do they actually inherit the promised land? Is it by the end of Genesis?
No.
Exodus? No, it's really not until finally the Israelites come back and start wiping out the people that live in the promised land, and then they kind of own it for a while. And we got Jerusalem. But do they still fight over it today? Okay, so has the promise been fully fulfilled?
Nope.
Okay, so that's a lot of patience, and with patience, you have to have the faith to back it up. So this is Isaac passing that on, like, look, I know it didn't come in my lifetime, but I still have faith that you'll get it, and his children and his children. Second of all, he agrees with mom, which is interesting to me, because if you'll notice, he says in verse 2, arise and go to Padan Aram, the house of Bethuel, Laban. Go to Laban in Haran. Okay, well, I'm going to pull up a map here in a minute and show you where that is. This is not next door. Okay, it's not, okay, you live in Fayetteville, go to Hope Mills. This is, you live in Fayetteville, go to Canada. You'll see that in a minute. It's not close by. All right, and then it says, follow God like Abraham did. That's his charge. He wasn't just blessing him. He said, you know how Abraham was following God all his life? Well, not only did he follow God, you know how he married the way that he was asked to marry? You know how he lived this life that godly people live? Jacob, I need you to do that in order to fulfill the promise. That's important. And then all this land will be yours, and of course, Jacob obeys. Because you'll notice right there at verse 5, it says, and Isaac sent away Jacob, so Jacob left, and he went. He didn't say, oh, I don't want to do that. You mean I have to walk 550 miles for a wife? That's what it was. At least according to the calculations, that was in one thing I looked up. Let's keep reading. Verse 6. What should we not do? Okay, that was Jacob's story. Let's read Esau's version. So when Esau saw that Isaac had been blessed, or Isaac had blessed Jacob, so he saw it with his own eyes. Again, remember, what's the only reason he's not killing his brother right now? Dad's still alive. So he sees Dad bless Jacob again. That doesn't make him feel very well. So you'll see, what do we do in the modern age? You know, when he likes that's his favorite son, so I've got to earn favor with my dad. That's what you'll see here. Son of Bethuel, the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, Jacob, and Esau's mother. Oh, sorry, I already read that. When Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent away to Padan Aram, which is funny to me because he knows where he went. If he's really that upset, he could walk and chase after his brother, even when his father dies, to take him a wife from thence, and that as he blessed him, he gave him a charge, saying, "Thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan." Now, right here, let me stop you for a sec. This is where he would have said, "Wait a second, I took a daughter of Canaan." So he's telling him not to do what his brother did. Have we heard that before? Don't do what he did. Or even worse, sometimes parents will say, "Don't do what I'm doing." Okay? Yeah, do as I say. And that it just doesn't work. You got to live an example here. Well, let's see if he can follow his brother's example. Verse 7. "And that Jacob obeyed his father and his mother, he noticed the obedience, and was gone to Padan Aram." Verse 8. "And Esau, seeing that the daughters of Canaan pleased not Isaac his father, then went Esau unto Ishmael." Good second choice, right? "And took unto the wives which he had, Mahalath," okay, that's the best I can do, "the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebajoth," or Nebahoth, depending on whether J is silent, "to be his wife. And Jacob went to Beersheba and went on to Haran." Now, Esau's story is that he saw what Isaac wanted, what his dad wanted. Okay, I see that you don't like the wives that I currently have. Second, I saw Jacob obey. Does he know the right thing to do or not? Okay, he knows it. Third of all, he marries again, and what I'm going to say here is for the wrong reasons. I mean, it's one thing to marry again and again. He's still married to the first two wives. Okay? So he has plural wives. And then he's only doing it to please his father. Now, should he be pleasing his father, lower F, or pleasing his father, the big F, God the Father? I think if he was marrying again, as in his old wife left him or whatever happened there, and then all of a sudden he's trying to get his life right with a whole different attitude, trying to seek and honor God, the whole story would have changed. But he's marrying again to please his little F father. Letter C, he marries an Ishmaelite. Who's Ishmael? Isaac's brother. The brother that was loved and cherished and... No. We got the Canaanites over here. These are the people that live in the land that we're going to inherit someday. And how are we going to inherit? We're going to kill them all. Missed by that much, right. And then over here, we've got the Ishmaelites, which we haven't heard about for a while. Because we only heard about Ishmael because he was sent away out of the camp because of making fun of or laughing at his mother, or, well, not his mother, but his other brother's mother. Track that. Okay. And then we've got over here the people we're supposed to marry. The actual, our people, the godly people. Yeah, I'm just pointing to you in general. The ones that we're supposed to seek out to. Now, let's back up here and look at it from a more illustrative point of view. Which one's the easiest to marry? Canaanites. Because over here, the Canaanites, well, you know, they're our neighbors. They live next door. You know, we kind of been friends with them. We're trying to do the good neighbor thing. And, you know, well, she's pretty. Not hard to do. Well, okay, that didn't work. I'm going to remarry then an Ishmaelite, which is not that far out of the way. But at least they're family, right? That's brownie points. Or should I go way out of the way to honor God? How often does that happen in our life that the easy road is not the godly road? And I think that's another point there to be had. In letter D, plural, it says wives. And I believe, which verse was that it said wives in? Esau already had wives. Verse 9, yes. It says, then went Esau unto Ishmael and took unto the wives which he had. Wives which he had. He already had a bunch of wives. Plus more. Okay? And then the last verse we read there was verse number 10. Jacob left Beersheba toward Haran. And I want you to see this map here. I hope that's big enough for you all to see. What we've been talking about lately here is down in Beersheba. Way down here at the bottom of the map. You think modern-day Jerusalem in here somewhere, all those other things. So far, most of the story has taken place around Beersheba. We talked about Gerar. We talked about Kadesh, I think. Hebron and things like that. So all of the story or the action has taken place right there. And first, Rebekah says, go to my brother in Haran. And then Isaac says, go to my to your mother's brother in Haran. Haran is up here. Does everybody see that? This distance here, if you look at the map key here, it says 0 to 200. That's in miles. So however many of these it would take to get to there. According to some calculations, 550 miles. Day's journey? What do you think?
No.
All right, here's my geek side coming out. I did the math. If you are a marathoner, I'm talking 26.2 miles. Fastest person in the world, I looked it up, could run it in 2 hours. Do you think that they could run it all day long at that speed?
No.
No, you got to pace yourself, right? So I tried to figure out what is a really good number for how many miles you can walk in a day. And they didn't walk at night. Because we read later on, Jacob falls asleep, you know, puts his head on a rock, has this dream. That's where we're headed.
Yeah,
right, right. Yeah, it's not by himself. he doesn't have a rucksack on, right? No, he's pulling camels and, you know, all the food that he needs for weeks. Well, okay, let's say he's really fast and can do 36 miles a day. Now, that's even hard for us to believe. I mean, if you try to walk 36 miles, I think you'd be done for a week, or at least I would. I actually, probably a week's worth would be 36 miles, and that's it. No more. Okay, but let's say you could do 36 miles a day for 550 miles. That calculates out to 15.28 days. Half a month of really walking fast. Do you think that's how long it took him to get there?
Nope.
No. Exactly. And I'm going to give him a little bit of credit because back then they did walk. They didn't have cars. They didn't. You know, most people didn't have chariots unless you were a king. But even if he did have a chariot or something like that, it did say that he walked. He went away and walked. We'll just say that if you have nothing better to do, no television, no cell phones to do, you could walk 12 miles a day. That sounds reasonable to me. Not for me, but reasonable for then. If you did 12 miles a day, it would take you 45 days, 0.83. A month and a half to, one, get away from my brother, two, find a wife. And then I imagine it wasn't just a financial transaction, like, okay, you're my wife, here's the money. No. Do you remember what happens to Laban's story?
Yes.
Do you remember how he had to work for 7 years? He's already walked a month and a half to get there, and that's without breaks. Okay, and then he's got to go through this turmoil. So I think that's a big deal. That number, I know it's just numbers, requires faith. And this isn't going to be a long lesson today, so maybe we'll read on to the next few verses, but I have a couple quick thoughts from what we read. What kind of application can we pull? Well, number one, if we're already married, we are leaders. I'm not a leader. I can't influence. No, you are a leader. If you're already married, you are a leader. Somebody's watching you. Okay? And with that, we need to stress the importance to the next generation how important marriage is. And I feel like, at least with my generation, we've almost done this to a fault. Because all my life I've been told it's so important, so important, so important, so important who you marry. So I waited till I was 24 or 25. But I know that modern young people today think about it in such a way, it's so important who I marry, I just won't marry. They still live with them. They still have children with them. I mean, my boss is like 36 or something like that. He's married. He has a kid. And he's thinking about getting married someday. And that's average. That, let's be honest. That's a modern day. So not just stress the importance of marriage to the next generation, but, you know, tell them it's not about you. It's not about how good can I get, how much money can we make, how much... It's not about you. Jesus' example was a servant. Yes, men, even the servants to the wives. Okay, and I know it's quiet in here, so I need to move on. Number two, full obedience to God. How often do we do just what we need to do? Just enough. Because in Esau's eyes, he was doing the right thing, yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I made a mistake. Oops, married the wrong person. I'll go fix it. This is at least family. You wanted family. So again, full obedience to God is not necessarily easy, but it's either wholly right or wholly wrong. Number three, make this marriage the best and not try again. Again, what we need to stress to so many people today is they have it in their head that, you know, if this doesn't work out, I'll just try again. You know, it's kind of the opposite. Either you're afraid of commitment and you never get married. And I'm not saying that there aren't people out there, because there are people in this world that never get married, and that's perfectly fine. Because God has called them to that. But I believe that's a special calling in and of itself. But other than that one little exception, okay, I'm talking the majority. Some people never get married because they're too afraid of it. I don't know if I'll last. I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can do this. I can't be faithful. I can't focus on one person my whole... Yes, it's possible. It's not easy. It's possible. But on the other hand, okay, well, I'll get married. Yeah, it's the right thing to do. I'm going to marry her. Didn't work. Okay, doesn't matter. Try again. No, that's the other ditch. God meant it to be between one man and one woman, I think, for forget the last two words, for life. And you might say, well, I already made that mistake. Yeah, so did my parents. I understand. If they didn't remarry, I wouldn't exist. So I'm with you there. But they're still married today. So stick with what you got. So make the best of what you have there. Let's turn back to Genesis 28, because we've got a few minutes left, or unless there's any questions, and I want to read on to just a little bit of what's about to happen in this story. Remember, these are bookends to the story. We talked about Jacob leaving all the way back in the end of 27, and then we talked about what happened before he left. So is this chronological? No, we're talking about like episodes in the story that happen within, and then we're going to come back to it. Any questions real quick? Don't want to blow anybody off. All right, take a look at verse 11 in chapter 28. I'm going to put that map back up too so we can see some of these places. Okay, so picture Jacob walking for days. Is he tired? Okay. And he lighted upon a certain place. That meant he just sat down. And tarried there all night. So maybe there were some days when he walked at night. Because the sun was set, and he took of the stones of that place and put them there for his pillows and lay down a place to sleep. It must have been pretty rocky ground to use a rock as a pillow. And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. You've heard Jacob's ladder. And behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, thy father, and the God of Isaac, the land whereon thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed. Stop right there for a minute. How many times has Jacob been promised that? Exactly. This is at least the third time, but I would almost say this is the most important one, isn't it? Because, you know, you could say that his mom affirmed it by getting him to do the whole trick and switch the birthright thing. And that meant that Isaac blessed him. And then when he left, Isaac blessed him again. But now, more importantly, he's dreaming about God specifically saying to him, I'm giving you this land. Verse 14. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west and to the east, and to the north and to the south. And in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all the places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again into this land. For I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken of. So I'm going to stop right there and just dwell on that for a little bit about, is he dreaming a regular dream? Now, we know a lot of times in the Bible, dreams are used as visions. Do you believe that all the dreams they ever dreamed were visions? I don't think so. But there had to have been something different about this dream for him to realize that this is God speaking to me. Because God used the dream rather than when God comes out himself or he sends an angel, you know, usually people get afraid. Maybe this was just the easier way at the time to tell Jacob something. So what did he tell Jacob? Well, he told Jacob that you are going to inherit this land. And not only are you going to inherit this land, but I'm going to protect you along the way. I'm going to make it happen. And then I love this part, for I will not, well, let's back up. Verse 15. Whither thou goest, and will bring thee again into this land. Does it say that he'll always be in the land? No. No, he's just passing through. Remember the map here? The promised land goes all the way up to the top of the map and all the way to the bottom, which again is humorous to me, considering how much Pakistan has fought over land and territory here. Israel doesn't have that much as it is, according to national lines today. But all of it is theirs someday. And this is that promise. I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken of. So not only is he promising all that, but he's saying, you are going to bless the whole world with this little piece of real estate right here. I don't know what the square footage of the world is, or square miles, however you want to look at it. But how big is Israel compared to the world?
New Jersey right now.
New Jersey? Yeah. Or, you know, we'll give them the whole thing. The whole land is California, maybe, right? So if that much land is blessing the entire world, is that... I'm trying to see how to word this. Is that God trying to impress us, or is that God trying to show you, look, here's what I can do? Right. Because it wouldn't be very impressive to take a little thing. He uses the foolish things to confound the wise, right? So if he took, I don't know, the entire continent of Europe. And they were a superpower, and they were like heaven, and everybody had to go through Europe to take care of things. That wouldn't be very... I mean, that would almost sound like what he was supposed to do. Again, like when Jesus came down to earth, you'd think he'd come down on a golden staircase and announcing it. No, he came in a manger. It's the same idea again. He's using these little things to bless the whole world, or as it says, thy seed, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And more specifically, what promise is being fulfilled there later in the New Testament? Abraham's promise, or even who's fulfilling that promise? Who's bringing the blessing to all generations? Christ. Christ is. Because it wasn't Jacob that blesses us, the Gentiles. It was Christ. But it was through the seed of Abraham, which was Jacob, which was David, which was down the line. That's the whole reason for all these genealogies that are hard to read and hard to understand. Just so we can go back and check, oh yeah, that's right, that's where they came from. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Well, thank you for being attentive. I know that not all of that was extremely interesting, and I didn't do any jumping jacks. This is 5 hours of sleep talking, so...